modern life. Between careers, kids, and health, it can be mayhem. That's why we're here. I'm Dr. Lisa Varghese-Kroll.
And I'm Dr. Lanre Falusi. We're physicians, moms, and longtime friends who break it all down for you. Wondering how to juggle all the balls and still stay sane? Looking for advice but don't want to be overwhelmed?
Curious about how to make the most out of life for your family but enjoy it at the same time? You're in the right place. Welcome to Health and Home with the Hippocratic Hosts.
On this episode, we have part two of our two-parter exploring lifestyle medicine. How does health equity play into being able to put these principles into practice? How can we overcome barriers to resources? And does any of this really make a difference to our health? We're back with Dr. Mahima Gulati to talk about all that and more.
Hey everyone, if you haven't listened to episode 59 yet, part one of this interview, we encourage you to do that now to learn more about the basics of lifestyle medicine. If you have listened to part one already, here we go with part two. You know, it is very clear to Lanre and I, you know, just hearing how you're describing this, it's so true. I feel like all physicians have been in this position where you know what your patient needs. It's probably not a pill, mm-hmm. although that's kind of how the system is set up for the for that to be the thing that we give. Mm-hmm. So how do we fill that gap? So my question is, how has becoming certified in lifestyle medicine and becoming an expert in these six pillars, but in sort of the overarching philosophy, changed your practice and how you interact with your patients and kind of what you recommend to them?
So it was actually very transformational to me as a endocrinologist. I'll begin with a few points. Number one was I was determined to bring it back systematically, and I was lucky. I was in a place where I had a couple of colleagues who got certified in lifestyle medicine along with me. One of them was my gynecology friend, Dr. Ann Bingham, and she is huge in lifestyle medicine. So we both did grand rounds in our health system. And our chair of medicine got interested in lifestyle medicine.
So it was contagious.
It was contagious. And a lot of residents, family medicine residents, our faculty, my own medical director of endocrinology division, they all wanted me to use this and somehow connect it with endocrinology and just overall, you know, a practice of medicine in our health system. So we decided to bring on what are called shared medical appointments or group visits, medical group visits.
Love that.
So like when a patient goes to see their doctor in a traditional setting, it's basically one patient is in the room, they may bring their caregiver or their partner with them, and then the doctor comes and sees them for a brief amount of time. Typically, the time allotted to these appointments is 15 to 20 minutes if they are coming back for a follow-up. If they are new to the doctor, they may have a little bit more time. And that's how it's done, which, as you can tell, it's, you know, this conversation that you and I had just talking about the six pillars was over 15 to 20 minutes. So it's not enough time to be able to connect with somebody and be able to get into their life and kind of dig out what is it about their lifestyle that they really need to focus on right now and that they can actually successfully do over the next few months until they see you again, right? So the concept of shared medical appointments goes back a long way. I think it's been there for decades. And there are some health systems like Cleveland Clinic, which are already championing them across the board. But it's very underutilized. It's actually criminally underutilized in our health systems today. And some of that is, again, logistical. Some of that is just lack of overall awareness. You know, when I tried to do that, our billing department, our administration wasn't sure if this is something that actually can be done. But again, this was not something I was inventing. And, you know, going through Medicare or insurances was not going to be a problem because this is not something that's completely out of the box or innovative. So it took a lot of time.
So you didn't have trouble with the billing aspect?
No, I did not. Knock on wood, never have I. Because the truth is, it's not new. This is not a new concept. But I had to tell my administration that we had to bring in external consultants to make sure that billing will be okay. And so it took a lot of back and forth and persistence, but finally we were able to get the shared medical appointments off the ground even before the pandemic actually. So we started in 2019.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, and I was lucky because I had a lot of, people who had my back, including my dietitians, who really were the people who actually ran the show when it come to the culinary demonstrations during these shared medical appointments. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if a patient wants their doctor to actually do these shared medical appointments, the way that these are done is these are 90-minute appointments. These are long appointments. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's shared with other patients.
Oh, my gosh. I'm salivating so over jealous. Here.
I know, right? The luxury of time. Yeah.
90
but it's interesting
because
the last time I had that much time was in the VA system.
Yes.
So that says something, right? Yes. Like where our priorities are depending on the payer and the philosophy. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, don't be sorry. Actually, this is important. So they, will be sharing that appointment not only with their doctor, but there might be a dietitian in the room. There might be a health coach in the room. There might be a behavioral health person in the room, a counselor or a psychologist or a social worker in the room. There might be an exercise physiologist in the room, depending on what resources your doctor has available mm-hmm. at that time. Mm. There might even be a sleep medicine expert in the room, depending on if your doctor was able to bring them in for a talk. And then there will be a few other patients. And there might or might not be a, sort of a healthy cooking demo, depending on, again, how much resources your doctor has. But yet the patient has to take out 90 minutes just for that appointment. And what that means is that, you know, the patient really has to have the motivation to go to that appointment and implement the therapy that has been discussed in that appointment later on. So let's say if I gave you a pill, this is the exercise pill, then you have to take that pill every day, right? If I give you a statin, you have to take it every day for it to work. So that is what I transformed in my practice, and I actually wrote a pilot of our proposed shared medical appointments as an abstract in Endocrine Practice, which is the official journal of the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists. Because I realized there's a dearth of shared medical appointment literature in endocrinology.
Yes.
Now there are some now, but again, it's very underutilized. There wasn't a lot. I don't actually know of any practice in the state of Connecticut, endocrine practice, that's actually offering shared medical appointments.
Okay.
So I do not know why we are not doing it when we know that they work. Mm-hmm. And the example I often give is, let's say if you have testosterone, a therapy, right? Testosterone is lipid soluble. It's, it's basically dissolved in a medium of oil before we get the injection, right? So if I try to dissolve it in water medium, it will not be as effective because the medium is wrong.
Right.
So I'm giving the therapy in the wrong medium or carrier. So similarly, if I'm trying to give somebody lifestyle therapy, I'm trying to tell them to do their lifestyle behaviors in a different way. Then if I choose the medium of a one-on-one appointment, even if I discuss the same therapy with them for 90 minutes, but if I do that in a group medium, they're going to be more likely to be benefited in that group format. And the reason behind that is because there is power in connection. When people sit in a group of people and they are sitting with 8 people, 9 people, and they're all coming from the same place, they all may have diabetes, they all may be struggling with their body weight or some other factor, some blood pressure or something else. They connect and they know that they all face the same challenges and that person's doing it. So now I have friendly competition going on. Now I need to exercise. I need to do that yoga. So there is that power that comes from a group and that connection and that undoing of loneliness that cannot come through a one-on-one chat with your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that's something I did over the last, I think since 2019, so over 4 years. And I kind of figured it out by the power of experience, how much different and transformational that medium was compared with one-on-one appointment with me. And I believe that we should, have more proliferation of research around group visits and the efficacy of group visits and more, hopefully, decrease in logistical barriers. And more training, more medical education on this format.
Absolutely.
I love that training, analogy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. Training in medical school and residency programs and also just the buy-in from your leadership sounds like that. Mm-hmm. That was a but potentially could have been a huge hurdle that you all were able to overcome because, it, you know, new things sometimes are hard to incorporate into healthcare. So definitely kudos to you. And hopefully that's inspirational to other people who are hoping to sort of start something similar in their own clinics or institutions.
I was grateful that I had the leadership I had. You know, I mean, like I said, if it wasn't for my team, if it wasn't for the people who had my back when I needed their support, it would have been difficult for me to do lifestyle medicine as a standalone physician.
Yeah.
And lifestyle medicine, I think I credit that with, you know, saving my career in a way because, you know, my career was starting to feel uninspiring and jaded. And so if I hadn't been able to bring lifestyle medicine into my career, I don't know if I would have been able to keep going on with the same enthusiasm and the same meaning and purpose. A minimum of 7 to 8 patients can actually be seen within a span of 90 minutes. And they are more effective. And especially if you bring in another provider, like a behavioral health provider, then the patient doesn't have to run from one appointment to the other.
Right.
You know, like
right.
If I have a patient who suffers from both diabetes and depression, they have to make one appointment with me and I'm booked out 6 months ahead of time.
Right, right.
And then they have to go see a mental health professional and mental health professional will not be available for 9 months and they have to take 2 days
off.
Whereas now they can do that in the same time.
Yeah.
And this is more sort of a better business sense for the administrators as well. So that part wasn't that hard to explain. Just, you know, getting more efficient. It's also good for, you know, the productivity of the providers. And so that I thought was definitely something that transformed my practice as at a personal, as a physician, also just the amount of gratification I got and the results I saw, because the outcomes were phenomenal. And also, you know, it, of course, it made good sense for just the health system to do them.
That's so, it makes so much sense. In the practice where I used to work, there were shared medical visits for pregnant women, since it was a practice that saw all ages. And we instituted asthma group visits for kids. And a lot of the reasons why those existed where I worked was that we wanted to increase access for patients, right?
Exactly.
Thinking, you know, through this and the health equity lens as well.
Yes.
And Elisa and I, health equity is definitely something we talk about a lot, something we're very passionate about. So kind of along those veins, in terms of either in your practice or in the bigger picture, how do you see lifestyle medicine potentially contributing to a more equitable healthcare delivery system?
Absolutely. We at American College of Lifestyle Medicine actually have what we call a HEAL initiative, Health Equity Achieved Through Lifestyle Medicine, H-E-A-L. But if you look at it, if you look at the statistics, the major killers, whether that's heart disease, diabetes, dementia, cancers, minorities and people of color always have worse outcomes. And, you know, these diseases, they affect us at younger ages and much more fatally. So, you know, I have so many patients with type 2 diabetes who will develop kidney disease earlier. They'll get strokes in their late 30s or early 40s. So, you know, the same diseases that are manifesting maybe a decade later or 2 decades later in a Caucasian population are presenting so much earlier in childhood or in early youth, in patients of color, in Hispanic populations, in Black American populations, in South Asian populations, in East Asian populations. And this is something that we can address through lifestyle. Because these are diseases that are, if you look at it, heart disease is 80% preventable according to the CDC.
It's
80%, which means 4 out of 5 cases can be prevented.
Wow.
And yet we have, you know, every year we are seeing that the age at which heart attacks are occurring and just the mortality from heart attacks is getting younger and younger, despite the clear data. And so this is where lifestyle medicine needs to be adopted because, you know, the drugs are just not going to cut it. The drugs are great if it is secondary prevention, whether that's for obesity, whether that's for heart disease, but primordial and primary prevention for children, for young children, for adolescents, it has to be lifestyle medicine.
I think that's just a great point. I mean, we're totally in agreement with you. And it is, I mean, yeah. Some of the statistics are really quite scary, even from where we sit on the, you know, on the physician side. So I can imagine that for any of our non-medical listeners, it's even more striking. But there's also the issue of the fact that many of our patients have barriers to pursuing mm-hmm. these pillars, right? Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, the cost, we've talked a lot about this, the cost of healthier food in the United States. Mm-hmm. It is cheaper to eat badly. That is mm-hmm. how the food system is set up. And then,
yes.
you know, you mentioned, we talked at length about isolation, social isolation. You know, we don't have the village and the community ties that many other cultures do.
Right.
Poor social situations, you know, families where the parents may have substance abuse issues and the children suffer mm-hmm. neglect, all sorts of things like this. So how do you, and this is a huge question that I think all physicians in every specialty have to deal with, but particularly from the lens of lifestyle medicine, do you have ways in particular that you help your patients overcome some of these barriers? Mm-hmm. Are there kind of tools that we might be able to use?
Yes. So this is the problem, the social determinants of health or the social influencers mm-hmm. of health, right? And this is why I think practitioners, all health professionals, physicians, providers, everybody alike, needs to be aware of the data behind lifestyle medicine. And, you know, not just dismiss that, oh, lifestyle or people will never change their diet. Mm-hmm. And say that, oh, diet mm-hmm. is, you know, not enough or, you know, it will only cause a certain percentage of change in a person's, you know, risk. And really educate themselves about the literature. Because I think we can help in certain ways now, you know, whether that means we are aware of what are the resources in our community. And I thought that really was the second thing which was transformational about my practice post-lifestyle medicine, is how I became a smart leverager in a way of the community resources. Mm. I knew who can go where. Who can go where, right? I knew my director of behavioral health. I was a person who was sending the most number of patients to behavioral health or sleep study or social work. And so as a doctor, I may not be able to sit down and figure out how my patient can get food mm-hmm. if they live in a food desert. But I know there are certain people in my health system who can help.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know how to connect the dots a little bit better. And I knew as a lifestyle medicine physician, that was one of my jobs mm-hmm. to know what I can offer so that mm-hmm. at least I'm helping somewhat.
Right.
And so that is something that lifestyle medicine trained professionals can do. And of course, we can, you know, it's not just in our capacity as a clinician. We are also citizens. We can also do legislative advocacy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We can also do, sure. you know, like we can do our share by going to a church and speak, or going to a library, mm-hmm. public library and speak, or going to my child's school and speak there, and which I have done as a lifestyle medicine professional because, you know, when I got certified, I got a lot of invites from, you know, like a predominantly Black church where they had a beautiful event for all women. And then there were women's wellness talks that I did. There were talks for local chapter of NAACP that I did. And the reason why they invited me is because I was trained in lifestyle medicine and they wanted to mm-hmm. connect with somebody mm-hmm. who's a doctor who can actually help them get a little bit of scientific advice on how they can bring this into their communities. So we can do community action, not just clinical action. We can do public awareness creation through different channels. We can, of course, do legislative advocacy. We can contact our Congress people or our local assembly legislators. And those are things, hopefully, that can eventually, you know, if there is enough critical mass, if there's enough of us doing this enough of times, can mm-hmm. slowly and slowly, you know, bit by bit, bring about a change.
I think that's wonderful and such a great way to end, because I feel like we talked a lot about what like individuals can do and how we can either as like patients, people, or as physicians. But the bigger picture of that connection is so important, and our role in a society to uplift one another, to share expertise, and just to make things better for everyone around us, I think just warms my heart.
you gave us goosebumps.
It's so inspirational. Yeah, yeah. No, it's fantastic. And phenomenal that with, you know, your busy life that you are making the time and space for all of that. And I bet that that's really appreciated by the people that you're outreaching to and who've outreached to you.
Thank you. No, thank you. That means so much. Thank you so much. That makes my day. And it's been a joy. Actually, I have benefited more than I have given, to be honest, because I feel like I am a better mom, a better spouse, and just an overall better human because of lifestyle medicine and because of all the people I have met and because of my mentors, because of my patients, the connections I have formed with them, and the respect I have been given and I have received and I have given. It's been something that I would recommend everybody have in their life.
Oh, that's such a powerful testimony. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. It's been such a joy to talk to you. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with our listeners. And we're going to link to a lot more resources in our show notes at HippocraticHost.com. So thank you so much, Dr. Mahima Gulati.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks so much to Dr. Mahima Gulati for sharing her expertise on the ins and outs of lifestyle medicine and how we can all use its pillars to live longer, healthier lives. For more information on her background and resources on lifestyle medicine as a whole, check out our show notes at HippocraticHost.com. So that's our show for today. Thank you, as always, for listening and for all your support. Please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other major social media platforms. And subscribe and review us in Apple Podcasts, because reviewing helps other people like you find the show. And if you'd like to support us with a monthly donation, just go to our website at HippocraticHost.com and click on the Become a Friend of the Show button. We'll be forever grateful. Thanks, everyone, and talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to Health at Home with the Hippocratic Hosts. Remember that all views expressed here are our own, not our employers, and all content is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as medical advice, nor the establishment of a doctor-patient relationship. Always consult your own physician or healthcare team for any medical issues.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us, subscribe, and tell a friend. And check out our website at www.hippocratichosts.com for show notes on this and all our episodes. Can't wait to chat with you next time.